Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
It was a good conversation, but not a conversation that will lead to immediate peace. President Putin did say, and very strongly, that he will have to respond to the recent attacks on the airfields. Well, that was the US President Donald Trump's assessment of his call last night with Vladimir Putin, referencing Ukraine's spectacular drone attack at the weekend, which inflicted billions in damage on Russian bombers and other military aircraft. Well, for his analysis, I'm joined now by former commander of US forces in Europe, retired US Army Lieutenant General Ben Hodges. Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us. So more information has been emerging now about that Ukrainian operation, which is codenamed Operation Spider's Web. But in your view, how significant was that attack?
Well, it was significant for three different reasons. Number one, most importantly, it inflicted real damage to Russia's ability to keep killing Ukrainian civilians. I mean, these bombers are the ones delivering the cruise missiles that have been hitting Ukrainian cities. And so now, if the numbers are right, about a third of those bombers have been destroyed or severely damaged. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, psychologically, for the Russians, this is a problem. They now see that Ukraine can touch pretty much every corner of Russia somehow. So there is no safe place for Russian assets. And that will be very difficult for the Kremlin to explain to people. And then thirdly, the chaos now that's going on inside Russia as they stop every single truck on the country to see if there are others. The recriminations against, you know, intelligence officials. How could this possibly happen? Kind of like when the Mossad did their pager operation against Hezbollah. I mean, it builds a lot of mistrust inside their formations.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, though, we have seen that Russia is slowly and with casualties capturing more and more Ukrainian territory, haven't we, on the front lines?
I'd not be willing to accept that. The headlines talk about this relentless, remorseless Russian advance, but actually, in the last year and a half, they've taken about 1,000 square kilometers. I mean, that's nothing. In a country the size of Ukraine, that's nothing, and at the cost of hundreds of thousands of Russian casualties. So Russia's only hope is that the West gives up on Ukraine, because as General Cavoli said during his testimony before the Congress a month ago, the Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, he said Ukraine's actually winning on the ground.
Yeah, I see this morning that the Ukrainians are saying, the military is saying that it has struck Russian missile systems again overnight. But I suppose what all of this tells us, Ben, and I don't know if you would agree with this, that we are just very far away from any sort of a ceasefire now, because both sides see potential for gains, particularly Ukraine, if we take what you're saying as read, that they are making real progress.
Well, I completely agree with you here that the prospects for any kind of a meaningful, sustainable ceasefire and negotiations, that's very far away. The Russians have never wanted to do this. They've never changed their objective of the destruction of Ukraine as a state. And the Ukrainians, you know, are saying, why should we give in to the Russians and give up territory when the Russians haven't proven that they can defeat Ukraine yet? And the Trump administration's approach has been doomed to failure from the start, because the Trump administration never appreciated or really cared about the cause of the conflict or why Ukraine was fighting, or they never understood the geography and the history here. And, you know, they've pretty much taken the side of the Russians on just about every aspect of it. And so I see no real prospect for anything to change, certainly not this year, only if there's some external pressure against Russia's economy that would force Russia to have to stop or change what they're doing.
But Ben, I suppose since Donald Trump went back into office, there has been this sense of the clock ticking against Ukraine, because the Biden-era aid has almost been used up. Now, I suppose they could argue that they can continue if they get the intelligence sharing, if that continues from the States. And then the New York Times tells us that there is increased optimism now that Europe can bolster Ukraine's war effort. There were certainly doubts about that not so long ago. Do you share that optimism that even if America is not fully supportive militarily, that perhaps now the EU can take up that mantle?
Well, European countries are realizing by now that the United States is going to fail to help Ukraine, that they're not going to, that we are not going to do what we should be doing. But that doesn't mean that the threat goes down. The threat actually goes up for Europe, because if Ukraine should fail, you're going to have millions more Ukrainian refugees coming into Central and Western Europe. And Russia has made it very clear that this is not all they're after. And so Europe understands, as does Canada. Not, it's not just the EU, but it's all of Europe, including UK and Canada, have to do something to help Ukraine. Now, the intelligence that the United States has provided Ukraine in the past was always helpful, but, you know, this last attack that just happened this past weekend, that was without American help. I mean, they didn't even inform the Americans, nor should they have informed the Americans, because they see the undisciplined, careless use of signal chat for moving information around. You know, they would have been crazy to share that with us ahead of time. So I think the Ukrainians, we should stop underestimating their ability. And there are other countries in Europe that are able to provide a lot of what Ukraine needs.
Mm-hmm. You're speaking to us from Germany today, and the new German chancellor, he'll be the latest world leader invited into the Oval Office. I mean, how would you advise him to talk to President Trump about Ukraine?
Well, I would say that the German Bundeskanzler is going to go in there to with confidence. He's got a good message to deliver about what Germany is going to do in terms of defense spending. But I think he will also impress, hopefully impress on President Trump that Ukraine's success in defending itself is not just, this is not charity for Ukraine or even just helping Europe. This is about stability and security with America's biggest, most important trading partner. That's Europe. Mm-hmm. So this is important for American economic prosperity, but also as a signal to China. If the Chinese see that the Americans are, that we, the U.S., are pretty flexible when it comes to sovereignty, then that has bad implications for Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, do you believe that the Trump administration is waking up to that threat, to that Chinese threat now?
Well, they certainly have talked about China, and this was a reason that they were, they've talked so much about turning away from Europe, that Europeans are going to have to do more for security here because the U.S. has to focus on China. But I'm having a hard time understanding exactly how the president thinks about certain things. You know, this mm-hmm. the Chinese are playing real hardball on the so-called trade deal. I don't see much room for progress there because the Chinese can see that the Trump administration backs down most of the time when somebody really stands up to them. I don't know that the Trump administration cares that much about Taiwan. I mean, from a diplomatic standpoint, it's more about large-scale trade, it seems to me. But there's no doubt that within the Department of Defense, they are much more focused on China as a threat.
Can we look just more at the Trump administration's attitude to Ukraine? And certainly we have evidence from their own mouths that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have an antipathy to Europe. And that has been fueled by a sense of injustice that the Europeans have underpaid for their own defence and allowed the Americans to foot the bill over decades. Do they have a point?
Of course they do. Every president since Truman has complained that our allies in Europe have not done enough for their own defense. So that is a valid complaint. And I think it's important to note that most European countries have significantly increased or in the process of finally increasing that. And I imagine that the NATO summit in The Hague here in about 2.5-3 weeks, the Secretary General is going to point to President Trump and give him a lot of credit for, you know, getting everybody to do more. And I think most European leaders are savvy enough to be happy for Trump to take credit for it as long as he stays engaged and doesn't take America's nuclear deterrent away from the alliance. And I think there are also fair criticisms coming from this administration about some of the trade practices. And I'm sure he and the German Bundeskanzler will talk about that today, German auto industry and so on. So there's plenty of things to discuss and argue about. But my concern is that the damage that gets done to trust and cohesion within the alliance and with all of our European friends, in order to make these points, does it destroy the relationships? And this is where I hope the German Chancellor will be able to protect some of that.
Now, we saw yesterday that Pete Hegseth, the US Defense Secretary, didn't go to the monthly meeting, which the Americans organized at the start of the war in Ukraine. This is the meeting which coordinates the military aid to Ukraine. What's your reaction to that decision just not to show up?
Well, it confirms what I had already come to believe, was that this administration absolutely does not care about Ukraine. I mean, all the Trump negotiation plans and their approach, everything they've done has been from a Russian perspective. This phone call yesterday that the president had with Vladimir Putin, where in effect the American president is now the spokesman for the Kremlin, which is incredible for me to hear and see. No condemnation of what Russia is doing, even making a reference to the quote, docked airplanes, as if they were innocent bombers sitting out there, even though most of them were loaded up, getting ready to go on another mission against Ukraine. And so the fact that Mr. Hegseth would blow off going to this meeting that coordinates aid for Ukraine just is another example of this administration doesn't care about Ukraine, that they're not motivated by moral principles of sovereignty and respect for international law. Mm-hmm. And so it's disappointing, but not a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to hear you say that the American president has become the spokesperson for the Kremlin. I mean, what is the states walking into here, Ben?
Well, that's what increasingly more and more Americans are asking. Like, this is not what we voted for. And it's interesting that the vast majority of the Congress supports Ukraine. Senator Graham and Senator Blumenthal, they have put together a sanctions package that would take a direct aim at Russia's oil and gas industry by putting enormous tariffs on anybody that bought Russian oil and gas. And 70% of Russia's oil and gas goes to China and India. Mm-hmm. And so this is the kind of pressure that would have an impact. And they've got 80 senators lined up behind it. Even the Speaker of the House, Mr. Johnson, supports it, but the president has asked them not to do it. So for whatever reason, the Republican leadership in the Congress does not have the courage or the political will to do what they want to do because they are intimidated by this president.
Ben, great to talk to you. Ben Hodges there, former commander of U.S. forces in Europe and retired U.S. Army Lieutenant General. Thank you for speaking to us.
Thanks for the privilege.